From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. An avalanche on Mount Juno Monday morning turned out to be harmless, but it could be a sign of more to come. According to the city's Urban Avalanche Advisory, the last several days of wind, rain, and snow brought Juno's avalanche danger level to considerable, which is a 3 out of 5. Juno resident Scott Sikoraki saw the slide when he was on his way into the federal building Monday morning. He said it sounded like a plow truck. He forgot to press record on his phone, but an uncredited video posted on social media captured the slide from Douglas Island. In the video, it looks like the avalanche might have come down to the Flume Trail. An Alaska Electric Light and Power spokesperson said that doesn't seem to be the case, but no one has been able to walk the trail to check because of the avalanche danger. In the Urban Avalanche Advisory for Tuesday, Juno Emergency Programs Manager Tom Matisse wrote that recent storms have brought cycles of snow, rain, and freezing mist, leading to a snowpack that was developing weak layers. Matisse wrote that, quote, "It wouldn't take much longer to turn danger to high today." He said if it gets warmer than expected or windier or rainier, there could be more widespread natural avalanches in the area on Tuesday. The advisory expires at 7 a.m. on Wednesday. And we have a correction to a story that aired December 22nd about the proposed plans at the Mendenhall Glacier Recreation Area. The story incorrectly reported that the proposal to allow boats on the lake has been postponed. That proposal was revised since the spring. The current proposal is to build 3 docks on Mendenhall Lake and allow for limited boat access. And Governor Mike Dunleavy declared a disaster after a severe December storm swept through southeast Alaska. It authorized the state to pay for emergency services and critical infrastructure repair. Now he's expanded the declaration to include relief for residents whose homes were damaged or destroyed. KHNS's Henry Leisha reports.
Last month, heavy rainfall caused destructive landslides, mudslides, and flooding in communities throughout southeast Alaska. Several homes were destroyed, and 2 residents were killed in Haines. Jeremy Zedek is a spokesman for the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. He said the state responded by authorizing funding for emergency protective measures.
Some of those emergency protective measures could be transportation of people out of a disaster area or housing them, or perhaps repairing a road temporarily to gain access to an area that was cut off by the disaster event.
In the wake of the disaster, state officials collected data from homeowners about the extent of the damage. On December 29th, the governor amended the disaster declaration to include assistance for individuals and families who suffered damages and expenses related to the storm. Zedek says the funding is provided in grants.
If a home was flooded, it may be able to help repair those damages. There's other needs assistance, so if people lost all of their personal possession, their transportation, or if they had medical, funeral, or dental expenses related to the disaster, those may be eligible as well.
The assistance also includes a temporary housing program to help displaced residents find accommodation and pay for it. It will be available for up to 18 months for homeowners and 3 months for renters. Registration for the state's disaster assistance for individuals began on Monday. It's available for residents of Haines, Skagway, Juneau, Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, Ketchikan, Annette Island, and Chatham. Zedek says residents will need to catalog their property damage before applying.
When they register, we want them to have a description of their damages or losses, home ownership documents, insurance information, personal identification, and proof of occupancy, something like a utility bill.
The application can be amended in the future if more damages are revealed. The state is seeking disaster assistance from the federal government as well. Zedek noted that some federal relief, such as a Small Business Administration disaster home loan, may be able to provide more financial assistance to homeowners than the state. But state officials are still collecting information to apply for federal relief.
As new assistance becomes available, it may change things a little bit. We just ask that people are patient, continue to work the process in order to facilitate their recovery.
The deadline to register for individual disaster assistance is February 26th. Registration is available online at ready.alaska.gov. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
Getting the new COVID-19 vaccine to rural Alaska is no small logistical feat. Tribal healthcare providers are mustering a fleet of bush planes and are even riding snow machines and sleds to get shots into the arms of elders and frontline workers. Matt Herz with Alaska Public Media has more.
About 50 miles north of the Arctic Circle in the tiny northwest Alaska village of Ambler, Dr. Katrina Bengard is on a mission to deliver some of the first doses of COVID-19 vaccine, a job that required her to climb on the back of a snow machine. Bengard was returning from a home visit to a 92-year-old elder who couldn't make it into Ambler's clinic to get the vaccine. It was part of a day when Bengard and a few of her colleagues flew to three different villages in the region to deliver vaccinations. To get from the airports into town, Bengard says she and her team rode on sleds dragged behind a snow machine.
We were also, of course, holding on to all our bags, all of our equipment that we were bringing with us for the vaccinations. So our job was to keep ourselves as well as all the luggage in the sled as we bounced along through the snow.
Many of Alaska's first COVID-19 vaccinations have happened in hospitals in Alaska's urban centers. But far from there, a parallel effort is playing out as rural providers give out the shots on frigid airport tarmacs and at village clinics. Providers say they came up with meticulous plans to keep the vaccine chilled and distribute it to dozens of villages that lack advanced medical care, ultra-cold freezers, road connections, and cooperative weather.
We were on like plan four by halfway through the first day.
Ellen Hodges is a doctor and chief of staff at Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, the tribal healthcare provider in southwest Alaska. YKHC's airborne vaccine program is called Project Togo, in a nod to the legendary sled dog, and Hodges was on the first of many chartered flights. Hodges says she flew with the Pfizer vaccine in her lap for safekeeping when her plane arrived at the first village where temperatures were -5 or -10 without wind chill. She encountered a uniquely Alaskan problem.
It became immediately apparent that the vaccine was going to freeze in the metal part of the needle. And so we had to really be careful about that. So I would have the the vaccines tucked in my shirt until right before we gave them.
After giving the final shots, the providers would wait 20 minutes with patients in a truck or a plane before moving on to make sure there were no allergic reactions. And if they ended a day with more doses left over than they needed in the villages, they had a list of people on call to be vaccinated as soon as the plane landed back in Bethel, the regional hub town. Dr. Tom Hennessy, an Anchorage epidemiologist and infectious disease specialist, says there's value in showing that the tribal providers can pull off this complicated choreography.
Vaccination in a really difficult setting, like transporting vaccine by plane that has very kind of fussy characteristics, if we can get that to work in rural Alaska, it may be a sign that it can work in other challenged parts of the world, too.
The effort is also inspiring at a more romantic level, too, Hennessy says, evoking the history of the serum run to Nome a century ago.
We have these deep stories of Alaska adventure that are related to public health, and here's another one playing out right before our eyes.
For now, vaccinations are continuing across rural villages, with providers expanding access beyond healthcare workers to essential workers and elders like Donnie Olson. Olson is a state senator who lives in the remote western Alaska village of Golovin. He's also a pilot, and he has a radio at his house that's tuned into air traffic so he can hear who's coming and going. On Wednesday, he heard an announcement that got his attention. The mail plane was 10 miles out with a load of vaccine for the village on board.
When the caravan came flying over and we heard it on the radio, we could breathe a little easier that they're here. It's not bad weather's not going to stop them from coming. And when they landed and got the steel treatment in the shoulder, that was a great relief for us as a whole family.
Olson still has to get his booster shot in a few weeks, but he says he's already feeling relieved that he's more likely to be around to watch his young kids grow up. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
More than 24 Native American and Alaska Native tribes are suing the federal government to stop the sale of the National Archives building in Seattle. That's along with the states of Washington and Oregon. The sale would force the relocation of millions of invaluable historical records to California and Missouri. The government is planning to sell the vast warehouse under a law aimed at unloading excess civilian property. But the lawsuit filed in U.S. District Court yesterday says the building is anything but excess. It contains irreplaceable documents dating to the 1840s and is used all the time for research about everything from tribal history to Japanese internment during World War II. This is KTOO News, and I'm Pablo Arauz Peña.